This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're still tuned to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs, and would you know it, it's the end of June and time once again for a wrap-up on news related to the environment with the good folks from environmental journalism portal makaranga.org. So in this month's roundup, we're going to first look at news surrounding both old and new environmental extractive projects. So the Penang South Islands reclamation, the mining projects at Tasik Chini and Som Forest, and also the sand mining over at Setiu Wetlands. What gives with all these projects? Next up, we're going to look at a massive deforestation project in Bukit Ibam in Pahang, which will displace Orang Asli families. And we're also going to take a look at some land dispute cases in Sarawak, where Penan and Kenya groups are alleging that they haven't given free, prior and informed consent to logging projects both in Miri and Limbang. And finally, we're going to look forward to August and see whether there will be a reconvening of Parliament. We do need our policymakers to table and debate responses, not just to the COVID-19 pandemic, but also to a host of environmental issues as well. Let's find out what's going to happen. Joining me as always to discuss this and more are Wong Siew Lin and Lau Yau Hua. They are the co-founders, co-editors and writers of makaranga.org. Welcome both of you. How are you today?
Good. Happy to be here again.
You. Always a pleasure to have you guys on. So yes, it's been a month, a flurry of old and new environmental extractive projects, right? So as I mentioned, Penang South Islands Reclamation, there's what's happening over in Tasik Chini, Som Forest, the sand mining at Setiu Wetlands, so much. What's happening? I mean, we did cover it on Earth Matters, but always good to have a good roundup from you guys as well.
Well, I think basically tune in to Earth Matters and look at the podcast, because I think you've done a marvelous job covering the Penang South Islands project, as you said, Chini, Setiu Wetlands. And I just want to add another one, which is the Pan Borneo Highway in Sabah and how it's cutting across, or one of its proposed alignments is to cut across forest reserves. There's been a new study that's come out that's been published, right? And it really looks at, in great detail, it's a state Sabah statewide research project that looks at the impact of roads on endangered species and wildlife in general. It's a very good study. It's by LEAP, LEAP Spiral. It's an NGO based in Sabah. So that's the other thing. And I think, I just want to say it's ironic that all these different extractive projects sort of came into the limelight in June, because June was also World This, World That, World Environment Day, World Turtle Day, World Rainforest Day, World Oceans Day, Coral Triangle Day. And so you had, on the one hand, lots of celebration, lots of solutions, lots of good talks about, what we can do for the planet. And then you've got all this other news happening at the same time, devastating news happening in Malaysia.
In the middle of a pandemic, no less, of course, right?
Oh, yes. That's constantly in the background, isn't it?
Sorry, I interrupted you, Siew Lin. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. And I think this is a good way to sort of lead into the next topic that we are very keen to get into, which is free, prior, informed consent.
Yes. So we've been hearing news about massive deforestation project over in Bukit Ibam in Pahang, right? And that's going to displace some Orang Asli families. What's happening over there? What are some of the concerns about this project?
Yeah, this project, it's being headed by a private company called YP Oleo Sendirian Berhad, right? And the central question here is, as you said, the Orang Asli there on the site, right, in Pahang, there are two Orang Asli villages right there on the site. And this project, it will first, clear the forest there, and then after that, convert the area into oil palm plantation and a plantation of a type of tree called paulownia, which, they grow it fast for timber. In the process of this conversion, the two villages will be displaced. Well, certainly one of them will be displaced, because it will be right smack in the middle of the site. And there are at least 8 Orang Asli families living in these two villages. Now, the numbers there is a bit iffy. I couldn't get a concrete number, because agencies tell me different things, the data say different things, but there are at least 8 families there. So the central key question here is, if and when this Orang Asli will be displaced, have they given their consent to this project to displace them? They have been claiming part of this huge area as their customary territory, right? They've been claiming this since 2017. It's not recognized by the state yet, but they have been claiming this. So, have they given their consent to this project? Do they really understand what this project is? because the project now is being reviewed by the Department of Environment at the federal level, because it's a huge project. The area itself is about, it's 85 kilometers square.
Wow.
So imagine that, that is 85 kilometers square. If that is a perfect square, you know, a perfect rectangle, you will go 8.5 kilometer in one way and then 10 kilometers the other way. And that forms that rectangle. That's the area, right? So it's huge. Because it's so huge that, so this is now being reviewed at the Department of Environment, the federal level, not just the state level. And they have yet to make a decision. You know, it's pending. And I think the investigation will get slightly more complicated now because there are allegations of fraudulent elements in two letters that were obtained by the company, YP Oleo. So these are allegations, right?
Mm.
Basically, what happened there was that although the Orang Asli have been protesting, you know, they've written a letter to protest this project since 2019, but the company got two letters of agreement, you know, in Malay, Surat Persetujuan, that they agreed, you know, eight Orang Asli villagers signed the papers, the letter saying that tiada halangan kepada projek pembangunan di atas tanah YP Oleo. Now, it's not described in that letter what the exact project is.
Right.
As far as the Orang Asli understood, they were told that they signed the letters to get free houses, right? Which actually the government should have been giving them, assisting them already, right? But so, that was the whole process. You know, that was what was claimed by the Orang Asli. So they signed the papers. I mean, these are illiterate Orang Asli. They have not gone to school, so they cannot read and write. And if you look at their signatures, it's all scribbly also. So they signed it. And then, so that's the case now. So, right, earlier this month, they were asked, do you understand what these letters are? And have you given your consent to this logging project? And, you know, all the ones that we reported from, all the ones that we interviewed, they said no. Right. Four of the eight Orang Asli villagers who signed the papers said, no, we did not understand that this was for the logging and plantation project, but we signed thinking it was for the houses. So that's the question here, you know, of Orang Asli land rights, of free prior informed consent, whether it was given, because this is a land that's claimed by them as their customary territory. They have farms there, they have houses there, and all these things. They have their graves there, which has actually have been already damaged by some of the logging that happened about within the last 2 years there. I should add that there is what the Orang Asli said, but then there's also what the company says, right? The company said that, you know, I contacted the company and the board of directors said that they have adhered to, you know, all regulations, rules, and they were, you know, strict adherence to the law, and that all their, you know, sort of like interactions and negotiations with the Orang Asli communities were done in the presence of Jakua, were done in the presence of government officers. So, but Jakua didn't reply to my questions. But it's true. I mean, the Orang Asli did say that Jakua officers were there when they were, you know, when the explanations of the letter happened and when they signed the letters. Yeah. And of course, you know, on the other side, there's also huge environmental concerns. This area, there are definitely concrete evidence of sun bear, tapirs, you know, gibbons, that sort of wildlife, elephants. There are sightings of elephants nearby. And then sort of, I guess, suggestions of tigers using the place too, or tiger or tigers. Because in 2017, there was a wildlife conflict report involving a tiger.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's also believed that the endangered helmeted hornbill live in the area. Actually, by right, when you clear the forest, you know, in sustainable logging in Malaysia, if that tree has a hornbill nest, you cannot clear, you cannot cut it. But in this case, the site is, you know, where it was removed as a forest reserve late 2020.
Wow.
Right.
Okay.
It was removed as a Forest Gazette late 2020. But the logging, the clearing actually happened before that de-gazettement. So that's, you know, we'll not talk about that here. But yeah, so this whole piece of land is now scheduled to be cleared, right? If it passes the EIA review by the Department of Environment. So there are land rights concerns of the Orang Asli here, and then there are environmental concerns here too.
Wow.
I believe it's also a wonderful landscape, isn't it? That area in terms of the ecosystems, Yahua.
Definitely in terms of ecosystem, it's. I think this would have been a great place for me to have gone to when I did the forest fire story last year, because I was looking for evidence that sustainable logging in Peninsula Malaysia works, right? You know, the forestry says that we cut these forest reserves at a 25 to 30 year cycle so that the forest, you know, we select trees to cut. And then once we cut, we rehabilitate the place, and then we let it rest for 25 to 30 years.
Yeah.
It become like, you know, a nice forest again. And this place seems to be exactly like that, you know, based on all the data I could find. I mean, the forestry department didn't, you know, respond to my question in terms of the inventory of the forest, right? But based on satellite images, based on the evidence of animals sighted there, and based on the account of the orang asli living there, this forest seemed to have, you know, regenerated back to what we would call a primary forest. Now, it's a log over, I guess, forest. So some would say it's a secondary forest, but in many of the qualities it has, it's a primary forest. So it would have been beautiful. And now it's, you know, it was last sustainably logged by 1994, 1993. So 25, 30 years, this is like, you know, the right time for it to be sustainably logged again, which means that this is probably a time when it has enough forest and timber stock there for the loggers to get a very good return if they sustainably log it. Apatah lagi, if they clear it. Yeah.
And I know that you've done a big article on this. Am I correct? On makaranga.org?
Well, yes. We wrote the story, but it was first published on Southeast Asia Globe, a regional media. And then we republished it with, we did some edits on the English version with some new materials for a Malaysian audience. And then we also translated it into
Malay. Yeah, as well as audio files.
Yeah, the audio files from the Orang Asli, because those are in Malay, so I didn't give it to Southeast Asia Group, right? You know, their audience wouldn't understand Malay. But we have it here in on our version, on our site. So we, for the first time, we translated our article into Malay, which we were very happy with. And then there will be a Chinese version coming up sometime this week. Yeah.
No, I just wanted to say that I think it's really important to listen directly to the Orang Asli themselves, which is why the recording is, I think, quite valuable. So listen to their voices.
Yeah, okay. So there's obviously something not quite right that's happened here. So, really need to find out, get to the bottom of that. But there's also land dispute cases happening in Sarawak as well. It's not just Peninsula Malaysia. I know, as I mentioned earlier, Penan and Kenya groups are alleging that they haven't given their free prior and informed consent to logging projects in Limbang and Miri. What's happening over in East Malaysia?
Yeah, it's virtually the same story, really. But this has gone on to, they brought it to a slightly different stage in Sarawak, in this case. Yeah. So you have, actually, just to give a bit of background, basically the Sarawak government wants to have all their timber companies obtain sustainable forest management certification by next year, actually. So every bit of logging should actually be sustainable logging in Sarawak. This is what they want to do. Yeah. So they came up with this thing called FMUs, which are basically government-granted concessions, yeah, that are basically they're going to use funds from logging, from any sort of timber production in parts of the concession to conserve forests in other parts of the concession. In other words, they're not going to log every single part, but they're actually going to conserve forests, right? So it's quite a nice use of funds that you know that it's not just going to go to government, but this is how the government wants to do it, and it's for forest conservation, right? Now, we have timber giant, renowned timber giant Sam Ling, right? And logging was approved for them in two FMUs, right? Forest management units. Mm-hmm. That's what FMUs are, right? By the way, I just want to say that this has been covered very, very thoroughly and very well by Monga Bay. Yeah, so a lot of the information here actually comes from that independent media. Yeah, so what happened for Sam Ling in these two FMUs is there's one in, as you said, Limbang. Yeah, and that's about 118,000 hectares. It's called the Raven's Court FMU. Yeah, mm-hmm. And the second one in the Miri division is about 148,000 hectares. Right, so they're not tiny, tiny things yet. Now, what happened is they received certification from the Malaysia Timber Certification Council, which is it's a federal body, yeah, in 2018 and 2020 respectively. Yeah, but then there's a dispute. So you have the Kenya and the Penan communities who are living in those areas, and they consider that land traditional customary land. So they disagree for the land to be logged. They allege that Sam Ling did not actually obtain free, prior and informed consent from the communities themselves, right? Sam Ling did not show them the EIAs, so they questioned the certification, and then they are supported by community groups like Save Rivers, yeah, as well as Penan grant groups, as well as NGOs like the Bruno Manzo Funds and Borneo Project. Yeah. Now, Sumlink says that it has adhered to all the requirements set by MTCC, okay, with regards to the certification process. And they received no requests, no formal requests for EIAs, right? So you have a very similar situation happening in Sarawak here. So what's happened, though, in Sarawak is that MTCC, because it's got to do with certification, right? So MTCC launched a process. They call it the dispute resolution process. And sitting on the panel are independent experts. So, for example, it's chaired by the former chairman of MNS, Tan Sri Saleh Noor, right? It also includes a former deputy DG of Semenanjung's Forestry Department, Datuk Sharudin Muhammad Ismail, okay? So they've got good people who know about forestry and you know, who will give this a good airing from both sides, right? Sure. So Sumlink says, okay, we welcome this dispute resolution. It's a way to protect the group's reputation and integrity. It's also a way to protect MTCC for giving out the certification, right? Now, the thing about the certification is it's not actually done by MTCC. It's actually done by a separate certification body. In this case, it's Sirim QAS International. So MTCC cannot actually withdraw the certificate. The certificate can only be withdrawn by Sirim QAS International. And Sirim QAS International did find, when they audited the certification, that consultation might not have been done properly. Okay, so this is all very interesting. So at the end of the day, you know, it's like Peter Kalang, whom you've interviewed, you might have interviewed before, yeah, okay, right, from Safe Rivers. He says, really, look, you know, bottom-up approaches really are needed. You need the communities to lead the charge in terms of making sure that things are done properly, or if the communities really don't want, you know, logging to be done, or they don't agree with that, you know, then the communities themselves have to lead the charge, right? So for example, Safe Rivers actually managed to stop the Baram Dam,
yeah,
you know, through a long campaign, very successfully. So he knows what he's talking about, and communities really need to get into it, and they need to lead the charge.
Okay, all right, so I think it's just happening all over. I'm at a loss for words. It's the same thing over and over again. And again, the communities are the ones that have to fight, you know, for what's rightfully theirs. But we'll keep talking about this. But, you know, we're running out of time, I'm afraid. But, you know, just looking forward to August. We know that there's another lockdown. The lockdown is continuing, not another lockdown. We are status quo, right? Parliament, we're not sure when that's going to reconvene. What are some of the issues, especially regarding the environment, you know, with Parliament not sitting? What are some of the things that are also, you know, kind of sitting because, you know, it can't be discussed in Parliament?
I think it's really important for Parliament and state assemblies to sit for environmental purposes. So for many, many purposes, for life to go on in general, I guess, you know, you want Parliament and state assemblies to sit. And I think we've been talking about this forever and ever. I guess we, you know, everybody needs to keep up the pressure. You need to solve the COVID issue as well, because the economic impact of that, as well as other impacts of that on environmental sectors, just continues. You have zoos again asking for money. I mean, last year we talked about this and we wrote about this as well. Zoos again asking for money. You've got indigenous people now who are caught again, not because, you know, there are not enough supplies and people don't know where they are. So that first exercise, that first round of MCO actually managed to get supplies to them. But now there's like EMCOs in, like, for example, Felda areas, which have cut off the roads to these indigenous villages, Orang Asli villages. So at the end, they can't go in, food can't get, you know, they can't go out, food can't get to them. So again, they're caught in this whole thing. We've got ecotourism. You know, like, tourism is dead. Ecotourism is dead. And all the things related to what ecotourism can do in terms of generating income for local communities so that they do not hunt or fish or poach, you know, that. So where's that gone? That's gone, you know, upriver. People have left. We've got local communities once involved in ecotourism in Sabah have left, coming to Semenanjung to try and look for work, and gone back because there's no work in Semenanjung either. So what are they going to do?
I would just add that as the, you know, as an environmental journalism outfit, we would really like the parliament to sit, if only because then the MPs can ask very important questions in the parliament, and then we can report on the answers that the cabinet must give.
Yeah.
Right? We ask, they can choose to, you know, ignore us, but they cannot ignore a question raised in the parliament. And, you know, we can definitely use those answers, right? And without that, And then, you know, many of our hardworking journalists cannot doorstop the MPs at the parliament, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
I think likewise at state assemblies, we would love to have state assemblies sit as well, and hopefully opposition do their job there.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to wait and see because, again, it's up to the Prime Minister. You know, based on our constitution, he ultimately decides. So we'll just have to wait and see. Let's see what our discussion is in a month's time, yeah, guys. But thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking to Wong Siew Lin and Lau Yau Hua, co-founders, co-editors and writers at Makaranga.org, giving us a wrap-up of environmental news from the month of June. If you miss any part of today's interview, just head to bfm.my/earth or just download the podcast at the BFM app. And for more information on Makaranga's work, just head to makaranga.org. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.